So what I've done is have an open dialogue with the people who work with me. When they're starting to think about that process, they let me know. When they are getting close to opening their own doors, we will stop giving them referrals from our practice, and then they will slowly transition their clients from our practice to their practice.
Hi, I'm Dr. Kate Walker. I'm a marriage and family therapist, practice owner, and professor of counselor education who took a passion for training the next generation of mental health providers and turned it into a multi six-figure business that designs the courses that teach mental health providers how to be clinical supervisors. Teaching graduate students and seasoned counselors, I learned about the fears. Fears about failing, quitting toxic work environments where you're seeing 80 clients a week, fears about starting a private practice, running out of money, getting in trouble by the licensing board, the IRS, you name it. I created the Texas Counselors Creating Badass Businesses community so mental health providers like you could have a step-by-step guide and learn actionable steps to achieve the security, freedom, and satisfaction of a counseling career you'll love. Look, you had the dream to become a mental health professional. You got the degree, you took the exams, you put in the time, whatever your business is, a private practice, maybe you want to sell courses like I do, you're adding clinical supervision, you want to write a book or get paid to speak, whatever it is, you are too important to your community to lose to getting in trouble, giving up, going broke, and burning out. Are you ready to break through those fears once and for all? I thought so. Let's get to work.
Welcome to Texas Counselors Creating Badass Businesses, where it's all about working smarter, not harder. And here's your host, Dr. Kate Walker,
who's a master at marketing.
When I think about a group practice, a successful group practice, I think of this lady. She has invited me to speak. I have worked with her associates. I've interviewed her associates before. She has a group practice and lives in another state. I mean, this lady has her systems down. And I'm talking about the amazing Jessica Eisman. She is a practice owner. She's a supervisor, and she knows her rules and her ethics. And growing her students into her colleagues is her specialty. Now, you've got to take a listen to this if you have any aspirations at all of becoming a group practice owner or a supervisor. She is the boss's boss. So take a listen. And don't forget, if you're interested in the 2024 Group Practice Summit, get on the wait list now. It's really, really easy to do. Just go to katewalkertraining.com/2024GPS. That's katewalkertraining.com/2024GPS. All right, let's take a listen to Jessica.
So welcome, Jessica. I'm so glad you're here. And tell us about Homegrown hiring students and growing licensees.
All right. Thank you so much, Kate. I too very much look up to you. Kate was a big, huge help when I first got started. You know, a huge part of the reason kind of why I have both associates and grad students in my practice. That was something that Kate talked about doing in the very beginning. I can see why she stopped doing it. I've gotten more and more of them. There's a lot of work involved, 100%. You know, hopefully you guys will get some things out of this tonight. I've heard a lot of people saying, like, I've been wanting to do this, and hopefully I can answer some of those questions that y'all might have. So a little bit about myself. I am an LPC supervisor. So some of, you know, the things in here are very LPC specific in regards to like rules, occupational codes, and those kinds of things. So I'm speaking from that lens, just FYI, but I think the general knowledge from everything that I'm saying hopefully will be helpful for everyone. I've been an LPC for about 12 years now. I have been a supervisor for 7. I actually got in right before they changed the rules. I think it was 3 years and then 5 that went to, right? So like snuck right in there, which I'm appreciative of. I also took Kate's course, and I'm a trainer for the 40-hour supervision course. And right now I have 19 clinicians, 10 of those are associates, and we have 3 grad students, which just graduated. So actually we're bringing in 2 for this next semester. And I think you guys were here for Amanda. She said something I thought was interesting about like the great grandbabies or something at this point, because I've got grad students who are associates and associates who are now fully licensed, who are now supervising at this point. So it's really neat to see. My why, you know, my first job that I had out of grad school was shut down by the FBI. And not too many people can say that, fortunately, I think for y'all. Obviously, I didn't do anything wrong or I wouldn't be here, but I'm trauma bonded to all of those of you who worked in Riverside when it was here. And that was the start of my graduate or my LPC license process. And it was intern at the time, now associate. And for me, from there, while it got better, there were a lot of places that I worked that, you know, I just didn't feel like people were treated fairly. There was lots of issues ethically that were going on at a lot of different places. And then when I became a supervisor, I started hearing some of those same things as well. So I actually started my practice because I wanted to have a teaching practice where I felt like individuals who are coming out of school or finishing up school could come in and they could have a very safe place to be able to practice. And I knew that I could give them, you know, really good clinical skills in the process. I want you to think back to when you were a supervisee. For some of us, it might have been a while, but really think about, you know, this is a great opportunity for us to give back to newly licensed counselors or counselors who are in training. Think about why you became a therapist. What did you hope to achieve by becoming that? And think about like what you hoped would happen to what actually took place and how your dreams or expectations might have been compromised in the process. And in that, thinking about how your supervision, how your sights really impacted your journey in becoming a counselor. I really love these stages of growth and transformation from Jeffrey Kotler. I use the therapist's workbook actually with my students and associates. And as you're thinking about taking on, if you are not already thinking about taking on grad students or associates, think about where they are in this and think about maybe where you are in this new journey, right? As a therapist, and there's 2 of these. So, you know, you might be in one of the later stages. But as a, you know, bringing students in, you might be toward the beginning stage. And these stages are something that's really good to keep in mind as you kind of go through the process with your supervisees. It's really important. And I mean, I go into this in the supervisor training, but that's a whole training in of itself on models and theories. But it's really good for you to look over those, even if you're not a licensed supervisor yet. If you are supervising, it's a really good model, you know, to be able to look at where future counselors are on the process of this continuum.
Jessica, I'm going to insert just real quick.
Yeah.
Because this came up last night. When you take on graduate students, you don't necessarily have to be an LPCS. You don't have to have your S. Now, it depends on the university where the grad students are coming from and their policies and their accreditation and things like that. But that's not a have to. So if you're listening to this and you're like, oh, no, this is about supervision. It's not. This is about hiring grad students. And then even if you're not a supervisor, people can get supervised someplace else and work for you. So don't tune out if you're not an S.
That's right. Thank you. And I do go over at least the K-CREP side of all the different aspects of what that looks like for people. So just kind of looking at counselor development, this is just a really good model to look at. I'm not going to read through everything, but, you know, when somebody's coming in fresh, you know, this is their first time that they've ever worked with clients. I don't know about you guys, but when I first started, I remember my first practicum client, my site supervisor, you know, I looked at her and I said, you sure we're ready for this? Like, you're just going to let us go in here and do this, huh? And she goes, yep, you better be because you're going in. Like, and I just remember being so terrified, right? They're going to need a lot more support. And that's something for you to think about is that, you know, taking on students, especially there's a lot of time and energy that goes into that. They're going to need a lot more handholding than maybe an associate might be, or like, you know, somebody who's a licensee, right? And then, you know, as it goes on, they're going to learn more and more and more. And what I like about having graduate students who then come on into my practice as associates, I've had people comment really about how surprised that the associates are so on top of it. They've got great questions because they've grown with me through that entire graduate process already. And so I feel like I get them to at least a level two, almost three through the graduate program with me in a lot of ways. And, you know, when they become associates, I don't have to handhold as much as I might if I didn't grow them from grad student. All right. So grad students by themselves. So some schools that we've worked with, University of Houston, St. Thomas, Liberty, and Sam Houston State. We tend to get the most from the University of Houston and St. Thomas. And if any of you guys are interested, I'm sure that they would love to have some sites because they're always looking. And I'd be happy to pass on that information to you for who to get in contact with. But we also have different universities that reach out to us all the time. We tend to have a wait list. People start trying to get into the practice at all parts of the school year. But the way that we've had it set up is that we try to keep on the clinicians or the future counselors from the time that they're practicum all the way through their internship. That you don't have to do that. And also, you know, there's opportunities to be able to evaluate in this process. I'm seeing, are we talking about practicum grad student hours?
Yeah. So maybe take a second. And because a lot of us I know back in the day, it was practicum. Now it's called internship. And those pre-graduate hours can be, you know, there are schools that don't have a supervised, right? And so maybe spend some time talking about that a little bit.
Yep. I'm actually getting ready to go into that of the hours.
Okay. So
most of them still do consider like a practicum and internship, but it might depend on like the university, and some of them like have, you know, practicum one, practicum two. Some of them say practicum and then two internships. So generally speaking, especially if you're an LPC, and I'll go over what that is and how many hours that is, because that's also really important for you to know, can I also provide these hours for these individuals, right? So the Texas LPC requirement, there's at least, this is just for practicum, 300 clock hours, of which 100 hours must be direct client counseling. And when we get into the K-CREP, if you go and look through that, it has that the students are covered by the professional liability insurance policies when they're enrolled. And that's in private practice. That's actually one of the difficulties that can happen, is that you build up a caseload for your graduate students and then they have a break if they're coming back as associates. And that, my understanding is the reason for that is that they're covered under malpractice insurance when they're with the university, and they will not be covered if they are not licensed by malpractice insurance. And Kate mentioned before, and I think that was 2 days ago, but just to kind of reiterate, you know, we've seen people do kind of some things to try to say that they're coaches and their life skills and all sorts of different things, but really like they need to be taking a pause. And it stinks. Like, it's something I would love to rally around a little bit. I don't know why or how that could even happen, but it is hard. It is a hard process for the clients as well as the students to have that break when they've been consistently seeing the clients. So if you look at the K-CREP practicum requirements, so the students complete supervised counseling practicum experiences a total of 100 clock hours over a full academic term. That's a minimum of 10 weeks. 40 hours of that is direct services. So practicum isn't as bad of as many hours as they need as they do over the internship. During COVID, some of the schools anyway got a little bit flexible because of all the pivoting and having to go to telehealth and whatnot, that they, you know, were allowing some students that couldn't get their hours. K-CREP gave a little bit of a wiggle room during that process, but it's gone back to, you know, you have to have it during that time. And also during that time, you are supervising them. So you're giving them weekly supervision as well.
And that has to be individual. So that's part of what you invest in them, right? Is an hour out of your week, or 2 hours, or 3 hours. I want to tell you, we've also got a question here. Do you allow the students to see clients on their own or shadow other clinicians?
Yep. Yes to both. I'll talk about that in a little bit, but yes to both of those. My kind of theory in that is that what better way to learn baptism by fire? Obviously, there's limits on the kind of clients that we might see. We're not going to give somebody a severely complex case for their first time. And so, you know, you can definitely field those, you know, that they're receiving. And then internship, they complete the 600 hours of supervised counseling internship. They have to do 240 hours of direct. They have weekly supervision. They can also have triadic supervision as well as part of that process. They also do have to have group. So that's something that I think, you know, people sometimes will say, okay, like I know I can give them individual, but how am I going to give them group? And I've allowed them to come up with things that they're very interested in. We do have other clinicians at the practice that do run groups so they can supervise or go in and watch those groups. They can co-facilitate with them and or, you know, creating new groups.
And I want to point out too, just when I teach internships, if we get students who keep coming back and they're like, I'm just shadowing, that's not a quality experience for them. And so that, you know, ask Jessica questions. And I know we've got other counselor educators in here as well. If you're nervous about this grad student seeing clients, because ultimately your job is to give them a quality experience.
Yes. And I see also asking about encouraging clients to consent to shadowing. You know, on our website, in our consent forms, I'm very open about us being a teaching practice. And so that's something that kind of let clients know. And it was easier-ish, I think, when we were in person. I do have some clinicians that are in person at this point. But, you know, it did kind of get a little bit harder, I think, virtually, which is really interesting because the person really isn't in the room. I mean, they're in the room, but you can't see them versus when, you know, they're actually in the room with you kind of staring over off in the corner, right? So, you know, we have conversations and just say, as you know, or you may not know, we're a teaching practice and we have counseling students that are trying to learn how to be counselors. Would you be open to having somebody shadow me? They're going to be looking at me, listening to me more so than their focus being on you. And you have every right to say no, please don't feel obligated. So it kind of is that kind of conversation. And sometimes people will all say, maybe not for this session or maybe not for the next session, but ask me again, because sometimes it might be something that they really don't want to talk about with a third party in there. But surprisingly, a lot of people are open and comfortable with that. So for those of you who have asked about being a site supervisor, this is the KCREP standards for that, a minimum of a master's degree, preferably in counseling or related profession, relevant certificates and our licensing, which would be being a licensed counselor, a minimum of 2 years in that experience, right? So 2 years as a counselor, knowledge of the program's expectations, requirements, and evaluations procedures for students, and relevant training and counseling supervision. So those last two, four, and five, they will go over with you. You can even ask before you decide to be a site to go over those things so that you feel like you're comfortable with that. And number five, the relevant training and counseling supervision. A lot of the schools have their own training that they will do and give to you. But if you've also taken any sort of other kind of like supervision courses, even if you're not a supervisor, then sometimes they will count those as well. So kind of reiterating that, you don't need to be a supervisor to be a site supervisor, but you do need to be fully licensed. You may need to be on site with the student. This, so far, we haven't had any issues with that. This changed pretty significantly during COVID. I actually have some grad students, now associates, who've never done in-person because they've just continued on the virtual. And so far, like I said, the programs that we've been working with haven't said that you need to be on site with them. You will be required to take a supervisor training course. Like I said, it can be through your own or the school may require their own. You do need to make sure you can provide the hours and the types of hours that they need. Like I said, that being mindful of how am I getting my students' clients? Can I give them the group experience that they need? How long am I going to commit to keeping them? And can I also make sure that I am giving them at least an hour of that supervision a week? And I will be honest, especially at first, you're going to probably be giving them more than an hour a week.
to clarify too, you don't need a 40-hour supervisor training.
Right, correct.
The supervisor, I mean, it's usually what, like an hour, a two-hour CE provided by the university.
And you will have informed consents specifying that they also will need to be recorded, the wording that we use for hours. So that will be in your informed consent because they will need to have a certain amount that they will have to be able to record. Paperwork evaluation. So you will be evaluating them through the school every semester. And there will be like a rubric. Most of us probably had it when we were in grad school as well, that you will be going through and evaluating their progress as they go through.
You have a question from Natika. She wants to know, will your presentation cover specifics regarding how to get started in this endeavor?
Yeah, I think so. This is the point of the getting started, of knowing what you need to do in order to be able to get started. So hopefully, and if I don't, I would like answer something specific. I'd be happy to try to answer that for you.
And then Cheryl wants to know, if you're an LPCS, do you still need the two-hour training from the school? If so, is it different by school? Membership, membership. Why would anyone want to join a membership? Because you're sick and tired of trying to find great information that will help you start your career, grow a practice, stay out of trouble, and oh, by the way, not be boring and outdated. You already know I specialize in helping you grow your skill set and career with quality courses on demand that people actually want to finish. But why should you have to pay for every single resource I offer? Let me introduce the Step It Up membership. Step It Up members have access to over 50 trainings on everything from preparing your accounts for tax season to using SEO to improve your Google rankings, writing a book, staying HIPAA compliant, to learning how to create a press kit if you want to start public speaking. You also get access to over 25 courses that you can use as continuing education and that meet the new Texas 50% from an approved provider rule. Are you a supervisor looking for a consultation group? Step It Up members get free tickets to the Texas Supervisor Coalition monthly live consultation group featuring great speakers and incredible up-to-the-minute information to keep your license safe. Feel overwhelmed by lots of choices and want an interactive training with a real live person? I've got you covered. Step It Up members get weekly live training with me every single week. And did I mention that Step It Uppers get a coupon for $100 off the 40-hour training to become an LPC or LMFT supervisor in Texas? Yeah, you get that too. You're the one working your butt off, sweating through the summer, corralling kids, and facing slumps in your client load. I want to help. All summer long, I'm offering a 50% discount on the annual and monthly plan for the Step It Up membership. No contracts, and if you don't like it, quit anytime you like. But you're gonna love it. You are too important to lose because you pay too much for online courses, you sat through expensive, boring live trainings, and you got suckered into long-term commitments with memberships that just didn't deliver. It's time to take the next step in your counseling career. And it's super easy to do. Just go to katewalkertraining.com/podcast. That's katewalkertraining.com/podcast. But you got to act fast. This is going away as soon as the summer ends. So get the discount, get the resources, and take your practice to the next level. I'll see you on the inside.
So I'm trying to remember back. I think I still had to do their training because it went over like specifics for them. And it does vary by school from what they put in the presentation from what I've seen. Does that feel right, Kate?
Yeah. And I think when I was, well, I know when I was doing it for the students at Sam Houston, it was like, we would like to cordially invite you. Like nobody's like, if you don't come to our training. And they're also aware that like, if you are a supervisor, you know how to supervise, but they're going to tell you in detail, okay, do you realize that this is, you know, you've got to spend 1 hour a week with each of our students? Do you realize that you're going to be obligated to watch a video? Or do you realize that you're going to be obligated to get in these evaluations on time? You know, they're trying to help you understand this is an obligation And they're helping you out by giving you the free labor, unless you pay them, which is wonderful.
Yes. Yes. And yeah, Amanda, sometimes it is a PowerPoint and answering some questions. And one of the universities we work with does do that. And lastly, calls with the university supervisor. So 1 to 2, unless there's problems, times, you know, the practicum or internship supervisor, faculty from the school will want to kind of touch base with you, you know, make sure everything's going okay, address anything that any concerns that you might have. But also you're able to reach out to them at any time through the process if you are having some issues. This is our wording for our agreement for audio video. So basically letting them know what it's for, who they're supervised with, their site supervisor and their supervisor through the program will be observing this, and then any material will be deleted.
You have a question about profit.
We find that emerging this teaching model into a group practice translated into higher profits. No, maybe over time. That's a good question, though. So I think it depends on how you do that, how we charge, because we at this time do not pay our graduate students. We offer economic equity-based sliding scale. So a lot of our students are seeing clients for $15 a session. And so that's not paying the bills necessarily. But I see it as something as like giving back to the community, giving back to the students for a learning opportunity. And then, you know, as they grow, right, within your practice, then that becomes, I think, more of a profit. So the growing eventually will be. I have 10 associates right now. So as they grow into fully licensed, I think the practice will see a little bit more of a profit with that. But I view the grad starting off with the grad students as something that, like I said, is giving back to the community and giving back to the students. You know, I'll show you our sliding scale, but, you know, you're free to set the rates as you see fit. So I've seen some people charging pretty high for students. So that's something for you to decide, you know, what feels right to you. So like I said, we use a sliding scale. We want to make counseling available and accessible to all. So there's the sliding scale depiction. You can read about it on their website. And I have the link on here. And they use what is called the green bottle. And it goes through. And what we've done is we've taken for them and we've put amounts at the top just as kind of a general idea. We let people read this and see where they feel like they fit in. And we trust them. So there's no checking as any sort of documents or pay stubs or anything like that. Generally, people are really honest. They're appreciative of us being able to do it this way. And so that's how we have done it. But other people I know have used like sliding scale based on income and taxes. And I think along that line. How do you accommodate room space if your office for students versus fully licensed, keeping in mind that they have lower returns per hour? I'm not really exactly sure how to answer that question, but because we just kind of accommodate them like we would any other clinicians, a lot of them are still virtual. So that makes a huge difference. And yeah, if money is concerned, I can understand you could dedicate certain times to that. Maybe some times that maybe your fully licensed people are not in there as much. That's something that you could do. We sublease a couple days a week right now. I'm seeing Amanda in here. She's got like 4 different locations, I think. And she's saying that their fully licensed staff have dedicated offices and their students work around their schedules and use the rooms that are open. Yes, students can do virtual.
It's a great way to make sure your office is working all the time. So if you think of an hour that, or, you know, an office is earning $0 at 10 in the morning, well, maybe a grad student could earn $15. That's a lot more than zero. So
yeah, and that's something to think about too in your questions of when you're interviewing. It's very reasonable to say, like, maybe you look at these are the hours that I want somebody in, and that's what you advertise for. You know, this is something that's supposed to also work for you, right? So you can do this in what ways make sense to you. Because this is also something that, you know, especially if you're wanting to grow, is like I said, I mean, it is a task to take on, but also you want to be able to do that within your own boundaries. How difficult, if at all, is it for clients to pick students when you have associates or fully licensed clinicians? Surprisingly, and maybe it's our rates, we don't have any issues. We actually, especially toward, you know, if they come in on their practicum by intern, the first semester of internship, they're pretty full. We do a lot of immigration work. So we always are really looking for Spanish speaking grad students or people who speak other languages is really helpful for a lot of stuff that we do. So being able to have Spanish speakers has been really helpful. Immigration. Thank you for answering. Yeah, you read my mind because I was like, what kind of evaluation? So they will shadow me in the immigration evaluation. So I do start them also on that process. So if they're interested, they can shadow me. They can help. I don't speak Spanish. I think I would at this point. I've had a lot of that, but they can help do interpretation for me. And that also builds some of their skills as well. So going into associates or individuals who are working on their full license, I break down my associate duties. We do a monthly group supervision. So that's 2 hours for the month. And then I see them individually for 2 hours a month as well. At this point, I actually have begun to be able to share some of my supervisory duties. So I didn't supervise the grad students this last year, which was really odd, but still a part of their journey. And I won't be with this next cohort either. And also my associates, I have a backup supervisor. So she's sharing some of that as well. And I'm paying her to do that. We do team consultations. And this is all stuff that the grad students are also can be a part of. You know, we have to remember that, especially if you're not paying them, that they are volunteering and we can't force them to come to things necessarily, but I find that they're really eager to wanting to be part of the practice and wanting to learn. You know, we have, like I said, monthly team consultations for the practice, and they get to learn from lots of different clinicians in those settings. Also, the people that we have who work with us, who are fully licensed, or the associates that we have with the graduate students, everybody, it's kind of just, we are a teaching practice and we make it to where individuals, you know, hopefully feel really welcome to answering, you know, asking questions and getting to learn from different modalities. Social media, they can help with groups, individuals, and then the intake and phone support. Payments, I know you guys are probably really interested in that. Right now, our associates are private pay. Our practice as a whole just started, some of our fully licensed individuals just started taking insurance, but we're doing it through ALMA. And so if you're doing it through and you're interested in taking insurance for your associates, ALMA or Headway, they will not credential associates through that process. We do use a program called Advocate that we got on with them, I think fairly early on, that they do some out-of-network billing. And they will do some out-of-network billing for some of our associates that are on that program. I can't speak much, like I said, to the insurance, but I do know that you do have to go through the insurance company and get directly credentialed through there. And they have to be supervised. So I don't know what that looks like, and, you know, with the associates in their own private practice. I can't speak to that. But I do know that Cigna and Aetna do take insurance with associates. Do I worry by using ALMA or Headway? So no, I pay for their membership for ALMA. The ALMA is a paid membership, so I do pay for it. And I do have W-2s. So all of my associates and fully licensed clinicians are W-2. And so that helps with this as well. I expect at some point that people might want to go on and do their own practice. And I will talk about that a little bit. ALMA does not take associates. Headway and ALMA do not. So if you want to take insurance for associates, you have to go directly through the credentialing process through the insurance company. So different ways of programs that I have done for associates over time. So some people want different kinds of experiences, but they really have had a great time working at our practice. And so we will do kind of an exchange so that they don't have to pay for supervision. They can continue to get 3 clients a week on average covers their supervision. So they don't get paid, but they get to have that clinical experience and continue, you know, with the practice. Or I sometimes will take on associates who haven't been graduate students. And that's a good way for me also, because sometimes they'll start off that way and they really like it. And it's a great way for me to be able to monitor their clinical skills, paperwork, all of those kinds of things, especially if I'm not in another setting with them. If they see any more than that, then they get paid for all their clients and the supervision is still included. All of my individuals are W-2. And like I said, at this point, someone on my team also helps to supervise them in-house. So percentages, slits, and fees. I know that at least on Wednesday, some of them spoke a little bit to this. So at some point, I kind of subscribe to the percentages, and there's problems with that on a lot of different reasons. It can be seen as fee splitting. And when you are a W-2 versus a 1099, those percentages that we often think about of like what the take home is, isn't really accurate. Because when you're a W-2, let's say you're getting 50% of whatever is coming in, that doesn't take into account, you know, and so it looks like the practice is taking 50%, but also that means that they're also paying those taxes, which is about a 15% on top of that. But also it starts to get into this really gray area ethically, and the ACA does have a really great article on that. But if you want to talk percentages, because everybody does, most practices and like what is fair, 50 to 65% of the client fee is pretty normal, and that is as normal for us to keep the lights on. And you can set, I do prefer a flat rate. Yeah. So what I've done at this point is that it's based on versus percentage. So I don't calculate a percentage anymore. I calculate based on a flat rate of somebody and how long they've been there, just like any other kind of job in that sense. Who keeps the 50 to 65% is normally what a good take home is for the clinician. So things to consider having other supervisees in this, you're balancing both administrative and clinical supervision. So there, that dual relationship is there, and that can be really hard sometimes. I tell my associates and my students that I am your clinical supervisor first and your boss second. It's really important for me to make sure that they're getting good clinical experience. And over time, you can hire someone to help with that. So the balance is a little bit different. How much do I pay the associates per session? It depends on your rate. So our rates are, I think, 100 per session, and we give them 50 per session. If it's an initial session, we charge a little bit more and they get paid $65 for that. They also get paid for their non-clinical time as well at $20 an hour. Knowing that they have to leave and go to their own practice, to me, I think that that's something that is going to happen at some point. And it's something that I actually don't mind. I think that, you know, going back to what we were talking about before, I know that I now have some really great people to refer to in the community. I help build in their private practice skills in that. I personally don't actually supervise people who are not in my practice and will not in the beginning of their journey. As they stay with me, and if they decide to open a private practice, then I'd be happy more toward the end of their hours to help them with that and get all of that set up. I do not do contracts. I believe in the autonomy of the clients. And so we have what I call like an integrity clause in our handbook. And so basically this goes over that you're not going to talk badly about us. We're going to all be nice and kind to each other. And when you terminate, we're going to give 60 days notice. And it's very basic. It's not something that's like earth shattering, but we do not do no competes, but we ask for professionalism, integrity, and honor in that termination. I am working on kind of a new way of, as people decide they may want to go and do their own practice instead of that, because it does, it can cause a, you know, if somebody gives you 2 weeks, all of a sudden wants to take all of their clients, you know, that could really hurt your business for sure. So what I've done is have an open dialogue with the people who work with me. When they're starting to think about that process, they let me know. When they are getting close to opening their own doors, we will stop giving them referrals from our practice. And then they will slowly transition their clients from our practice to their practice. So it doesn't hit all of us at once, and they still get the benefit as well. I require a minimum number of hours per week. Is that for like seeing clients? Generally speaking, 8 to 10 for associates. Yeah. I mean, 8 to 10 really is kind of like breaking even, or maybe you're getting a little bit of income for the practice. So that kind of is my like minimum for part-time. Why grow? You know, you have the opportunity to help shape and build competent, authentic, clinically solid clinicians, better client outcomes. You know what you're giving the people that you're serving. you know, can control the learning environment somewhat, right? I think being able to have somebody from the time that they're a student all the way up until they're fully licensed, it builds a really big trust that definitely impacts the work culture and environment. And if and when they leave, you know that you have amazing referrals within the community to give. Somebody asked about, can an LPC diagnose? Yes. Oh, associate. I should say associate. Also, yes, an associate. LPC associates can diagnose. And I put the Texas occupational code in here that talks about that. Does it specifically say LPC associates can diagnose? No. But it does say that what the definition of a counselor is and then what counselors can do. And that definition of counselors does include the associates as well. Can LPCs own their own practice? Yes, absolutely. So I put a little bit of stuff in here for you to look into that and what that means. Also, something that has been going on in the chat rooms I've been seeing a lot of if you have associates, it is LPC associate. It is a violation to write LPCA. So just keep that in mind. So I love this quote. If you can hire people whose passion intersects with the job, they won't require any supervision at all. They will manage themselves better than anyone could ever manage them. Their fire comes from within, not from without. Their motivation is internal, not external. And I really feel like that's the culture that I've tried to build through this, that the people who work with me, you know, they really want to be there and they're passionate about it. And that keeps them there.
Hey, badasses, we can all agree that counselors want a path to a successful counseling career. But that means you have to find quality training. That's not even the real barrier. The real problem is a lot of information can be overwhelming and you, my badass, are busy. So you're probably asking yourself, how can I improve my practice while still caring for people? How do I grow my skill set, become a supervisor, without losing my work-life balance? How do I find quality training that won't cost too much time and money? Bottom line, counselors who want a successful counseling career value the goal of growing their skill set and even becoming a supervisor, but at the same time struggle with finding time to attend quality courses. Counselors can't overcome this barrier because so many times courses with tempting titles overpromise and underperform. Let me ask you something. What if there were courses that delivered exactly what they promised, that didn't take a lot of time, and didn't break the bank? That's exactly the kind of course we design at Kate Walker Training. I specialize in helping you grow your skill set and career with quality courses on demand. And we have so many to choose from. If you're asking yourself, where do I go if I want to sustain my practice and grow my marketing presence? Well, check out the Step It Up membership. What do you do if you're ready to pay it forward and add streams of income? Well, check out the supervisor training. See if you're eligible. If you're looking for an experience that's more hands-on, keep an eye out for open enrollment for Badass Basics and our exclusive mastermind groups. I'm Dr. Kate Walker. Thank you so much for listening to Texas Counselors Creating Badass Businesses. Thank you to Ridgely Walker for her lovely voiceovers at our introduction. And do me a favor, when you get a second, please like, share, and subscribe, and write us a review. That's really how we get picked up by other RSS feeds, and we get this information out to the mental health badasses who need it. Thanks again, and keep saving the world with excellent therapy.